it is 7 a.m. on a Saturday, and we've got the workaholics listening on the line, or the up early seniors, or the up early business guys.
Hey, watch what you're saying about seniors.
I know. You know? This is Zach and Steve.
You know,
Canada.
We get up before you guys do.
Oh, man. I never thought of you as a senior until today.
Well, I never thought of myself as a senior until today.
I bought you lunch
senior
today.
Discount, the senior
and you got
discount.
The senior discount.
And I didn't even have to show my ID. What does that tell
no,
you?
No, it was beautiful. That she didn't even card you for your seniorism. And but you're young enough to be feisty.
A
and
senior
old
is anybody
enough to be
over
wise.
45.
Is that it?
Yeah, anybody over 45 is
oh
a senior.
Oh, my gosh. I'm 10 years to senior. I thought it was like 60. I thought
no,
you had to be
45.
Over
45.
45.
Yeah, it just depends on whether you're defining it by Steve's standards or by the AARP standards, and we go with Steve.
Okay, so I'm 35 years old and been getting AARP mail for 6 years, so what does that tell you?
Then they think you're a senior.
Great. I actually called them a couple months ago, and I said, look, I'm 35. Send me these in 15, 20 years. And they said they'd stop, but it still continues to go. I don't know. Maybe it has something to do. I'm a kidney transplant recipient or something like
no,
that.
No, it's
I don't
because
know.
Our guest will tell you what's it's in their software, and once it gets in the software and on the internet, you're done.
I'm you done. Know, it's all over, done. Folks. It's all over. Well, we are excited about our guest today. Mr. Tom Gobel is with us from Network Computing Architects, and we're excited to have him. We're not introducing him just yet because, Steve, I want you, man, what a show last week, though. We had a great show last week with Margo from Pinkabella Cupcakes. What a great show.
Yeah. If you guys didn't get to hear that one, you want to get the podcast, excellentcultures.com/podcast. Brilliant.
Podcasts. It's with an S.
It's with an S. Podcasts. Yeah. I'll do better. The passion of this woman in this business that she started as an entrepreneur and how it's exploded with growth is something you got to hear.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And our podcast is up and working. We're excited about that. And it's looking good. It's looking good. So, Steve, give us a lowdown, basically, just really quick before we get to our guest, because he's who we want to hear from.
Well, Tom, CEO of Network Computing Architects in Bellevue, Washington, is actually the visionary behind this radio show, although he didn't know it until I told him today. Tom and I have known each other for a while and have shared a lot of common interest in business. And Tom's mission in life is to help the good guys win. And he, you know, we were walking down a street by, I think it was Seattle Pacific University, late one night after a industrial organizational psychology class, and we're pretty excited and inspired. And Tom was sharing how he thought it was so important that somebody do something to help the good guys in business win, because there were too many bad guys that were winning.
Yeah.
And he didn't realize that when he planted that seed, it was someday going to become a radio show that he would be a guest on.
Yeah, he's a guest on.
But I think he does now.
Yeah, now he does.
Yeah, but Tom is a great guy, a great leader, a great CEO, and a great human being. You'll find out more when he gets to talk to us, you know, about some of his values. Tom, tell us about NCA. Tell us about, you know, what your vision was.
Hold
how you
on,
got
before
what
he gets
did.
There, we have to let the listeners know, because this will catch a few listeners
all
if
right.
they're over there. This is the first Washington State Cougar we've interviewed, you guys. This is the first one. We've had some SPU grads. We've had some Husky grads. We've had a lot of Husky grads. Finally, we got a Cougar. Tom, welcome the Cougars.
Not only is he a Cougar, but his kids are Cougars.
Oh man.
That's right. Yeah, you have to love that diversity on your show.
Yeah, we've been very one-sided. We're actually excited that Eastern Washington is being represented today.
Yeah, and back to AARP, Zach. I think it's software that finds the old soul. So that's what I think happened to you.
Well, my wife and I went to see that movie Gangster Squad last night, and it takes place in the 1950s. And I leaned over to her during that movie, and I'm like, I wish we lived in the 1950s.
That is so me. I'm that guy.
By the way, that's a great movie, you guys. Go see it. Great leadership principles. Good stuff in it. And cool. I think that Ryan Gosling guy is the new Brad Pitt. So he'll be the next coming.
He must be. So Tom, give us some background on NCA and you. You know what the firm does. And remember, you're talking to an audience here that is about 20% techies and the rest business people that are looking for a techie to explain what techie means to them.
Okay. Yeah, it started off pretty simple, and it's, in many ways it's still simple today. Back in 1992, 20 years ago, we were in the earliest days of what is now kind of the internet ISP evolution around wide area networking and email and all the things that have just are such commonplace today. And what we saw as an opportunity was to build some of the first wide area networks related to kind of the start of helping phone companies understand ISPs and the ability to bring email into corporations and all that. So we were early with that phase and working with phone companies and working with local businesses. And from there, what happened to us is as we were doing that with these a newer term around hacking and hackers and the beginning of what started to show up as the early bad guys, we realized that what we were doing in the enablement of around email and as a corporate tool or just a business tool is that we were now needed to think about ways that we could protect, you know, people's corporate assets and their information and all that. So we were pretty early into the field of information security. And with that, it kind of led to a relationship that was kind of in our way, and that was around the phone companies themselves with the technology they had that drove the wide area networks. And so we reached out to US West at the time and several other companies and developed a business partnership with them so we could... Basically, what I told them when I went to them many years ago is I told them, I said, I think I can make your customer satisfaction go up. And, you know, you kind of laugh now, but they had all the technology they needed, but they really didn't know how to sell it. And and we knew how to sell it, and we needed what they had. So it was a perfect fit. We've enjoyed a long relationship there, and it's kind of blossomed into we've acquired a couple companies. We're headquartered in Bellevue, and we have offices in Portland, Oregon, and Silicon Valley. And one of the things that we do today is we look at people's business and their business applications, and we try to build sustainable networks that allow them, you know, to safely communicate and take advantage of all the current technologies today.
So, Tom, for our listeners that don't understand tech terms, what's a wide area network and how does it differ from something that is not a wide area network?
Well, the wide area network is just connecting remote offices to a corporate office, connecting partners. It's kind of a distant network over, you know, the phone company transport.
Okay.
Where a local area network is just connecting the PCs inside of a business.
Okay, so it involves
kind of
the internet.
Yeah, and it's interesting because what is traditionally the LAN and what's traditionally the WAN has become blurred because the edge of the network now is people. And so it's smart devices, it's tablets, and people are now your network. So if you have someone in a coffee shop at Starbucks in Hong Kong, you have a node in Hong Kong on your network now. So it's a... You know, the world's kind of morph. Technology is, you know, we're seeing a sea change in how, you know, businesses run and in smartphones, smart devices, and that whole realm is just kind of changing our industry and changing our society.
Yeah, well, a couple of stories that you've shared with me that just shook the daylights out of my thinking with respect to technology. One was listening to one of your keynote speakers at the big network security conference that you sponsor every year. By the way, great conference. What, 600-700 people attend, fill up the Bellevue Hyatt every year. Is that right, Tom?
Yeah, it is. That's right. I started that because there was nothing like that to bring thought leadership together, to actually hear more about where technology is going and where business is aligned.
Yeah, and it's free, right?
It is.
Yeah.
When is that this year?
And we generally have it in October.
Okay.
So date to be set.
So October. But, I mean, if you want to hear the most brilliant minds in the world on the subject of wide area networks, communicating over your handheld, over your computer network, over any part of your business, and how to protect it. Make sure you follow Tom and Network Computing Architects, because these conferences are phenomenal. But in any event,
Twitter account, by the way, is at NCANet.
Yeah, follow that at NCANet on Twitter, and Tom will give you the updates as they happen. But back to our question, a couple of things just scared the daylights out of me. One of your speakers, and you explained to me what this meant, shared at one event that the hacker of today is no longer a geek who can't get a date on Friday night, but he is or she is a nation state or a terrorist group who is actually out to steal your information, and they can, you know, steal it with these sneaky tactics that come from social media, and the next thing you know, all your information is gone, all your money is gone, and it's somewhere in, you know, in a third world country or Russia or Iran, you know, or North Korea, you name it. And then the other part was you were sharing with me more specifically on an incident that we'll ask you to comment on, you know, your perspective as a network security expert, where they found a nanobot that was broadcasting information in the thermostat at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce that was broadcasting back to China. Is that right, Tom?
That's right.
That's some crazy, scary stuff.
It's crazy,
which
scary
leads
stuff.
Us to a commercial break. And we want you to come back. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. Come back and get debriefed.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNTCultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
And we're back, Clay 1180 AM. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters, brought to you by excellentcultures.com. On the line, Tom Gobel from Network Computing Architects. Steve, this China secrecy, underground hacking, I'm nervous.
So scare the daylights out of us, Tom, by telling us why every firm that has any kind of technology that involves a computer or a network, or let's say one to five computers should contact NCA or more, should contact NCA to protect themselves against getting ripped off while they're asleep.
Well, the world has changed. It started off with hackers and kind of intentional people and people that wanted to create disruption. And it's come a long way in that the bad guys are winning. And that's kind of a statement based on the fact that as you pointed out, Steve, the nation-state countries like Russia and China have created, you know, pretty well-funded groups. China's generally looking for secrets. Russia's generally looking for money. And now we have new threat vectors out of Iran that are headed by generals that have been blessed by the Ayatollah. And so there's, I think, the current Iranian funding effort has 2,500 people involved, 27 countries supporting their efforts, and so we're really good at a number of things related to understanding your business requirements, and then helping you lock down your assets and keep your business safe, and that's around the technical controls around traditional firewalls and security products. And what we're finding going into 2013, and it's just the way it is today, is the technical controls around keeping people out of your network, the bad people out of your network, it just isn't good enough anymore. You need to do the best you can, and there's good products. There's some products that are better than others, depending upon your environment. But what we talk about nowadays is around security analytics and knowing who's in your network. And that's where thermostats come in. That's where video conferencing, conference rooms come in. It's where servers that you have in your server room have been taken over. The bad guys don't come in and disrupt your network anymore. They come in, you don't know they're in there, and there's a number of techniques to do that. And they start using your network as part of a global network. And there's secrets being extracted out of Chrysler, there's secrets extracted out of Ford, there's, you know, pretty much any large company that has an asset that could be valuable becomes a target. So if you're a business and you think that you have anything to protect, well, if the bad guys wanted to go after you, they can be pretty successful. And so the larger corporations are starting to lock down their networks and starting to use more security analytics. So the nation-state efforts and all the espionage that goes on there is actually not only well-funded and well-educated, but they're now going after the kind of the mid-sized companies, large commercial companies, and their interest is to hurt our economy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 2013... is really the year that we talk about security analytics and knowing who's in your network and what's happening inside your network.
And these 2,500 guys that fund this attack, let's say, in Iran, these are not, you know, bombs and nukes and missiles. These are hackers sneaking inside of your network when you're asleep and nobody knows that they're there, extracting information that they can turn around and use against you to either destroy your company, steal your proprietary information, or even take down the United States economy. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, they're simply I was visited in December with some folks that came out from Washington D.C. and met with a number of us in the Seattle area, and they showed us pictures of some of the new campuses, and they're as big or bigger than the Microsoft campus, and architecturally as pleasing or as modern as you could ever imagine. When you see aerial pictures of the training grounds or the campuses, it's just almost, it almost takes your breath away.
So terrorism is now on the internet, and you don't even know that it's there because it happens when you're asleep.
Yeah, the breaches are anything that's important, medical records, again, blueprints, whatever your secret sauce might be. And, being ignorant to it and not understanding how you might be at risk or where you might be at risk, it just doesn't work anymore to hope that you're not attacked, because the attacks are and the threat vectors coming into the commercial marketplace and into small business. And that's where, when we met with the State Department and some other folks in December, they asked us to go out and talk to the community and talk to businesses about being more aware of what their responsibilities are to protect their businesses from being compromised.
Yeah, and the tone of what I heard when I was listening to some of the folks you've introduced me to and then listening to you is that for these nation states and these hacker groups, traditional firewalls is like a joke. It's like, how many traditional firewalls does it take to change a light bulb? And the answer is we don't care, because we can get through all of them in a nanosecond.
Yeah, there's new technology that's certainly better, and it's the problem is the companies that are involved in that, all most of them are public, and you know, all the security companies don't share the secrets like the bad guys share the secrets. So you have everybody out for their own profit and their own dollar, and it doesn't create a really comprehensive product that everybody can use that you know, stops the adversary. So, yeah, it's there is new technology that works better, but it's not enough.
Well, kind of shifting to our focus on the, you know, your vision for a culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement. When you're in the security business of helping other people protect what's right and do what's right, the pressure is really on, you know, you as an organization and on your people to make sure that you're not just helping others do what's right and protecting them, but you guys are doing what's right as well. So, and I mean, I've come to know you well enough in some of the work we've done together and some of the work we've done with your firm to know that, you know, you're very serious about, you know, living ethics and values in your firm and with your clients. And anybody that's ever known you or done business with you can testify to that. Tom, what's your vision? You know, share with us, share with our listeners your vision for a culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement.
Well, you know, developing a rich environment around culture is critical to, you know, your success in whatever your vision is. And so you mentioned I like to promote seeing the good guys win. With the globalization of the economy and with the, the kind of the world becoming, you know, one marketplace, it's harder to, you know, you really have to define what are your ethics, what are your values, and, you know, get your employees involved at a level where they can participate in your business. And so one of the things that I look for, and we've always kind of called, is a high-fiving environment. And that's where I try to encourage everyone to recognize anybody to help them win or succeed in a project, you know, even if it's little things, and, you know, give them a high-five. And when you are contributing to somebody else's success, they'll give you a high five. It kind of goes around in a circle. And so I think that, you know, when you look at your vision, you also have to have clearly stated goals around, you know, what's important. You need to have some strong HR practices, mentorship practices within some of your senior people or your more talented people. And you have to create a safe work environment for people to thrive and to be recognized.
Yeah, well, I mean, what you're saying is just so unique and interesting coming from a technology firm where, you know, those of us who are anywhere around, you know, the technology hub of Seattle hear all these war stories about, you know, executives in technology firms just beating each other to death in the spirit of maximizing innovation and, you know, screaming and yelling and shouting and cursing at each other in the context of the business culture. And it sounds, and these are some of the guys that hire you to do projects for them and your team. It sounds so unique, you know, coming from a technology firm that stuff like, you know, if you're selling Mama's Homemade Cookies, we could get, you know, high five moments. But, I mean, how are you able to implement a culture like that in a technology business where, you know, competition is so intense, it's so dog-eat-dog, and, you know, people just don't care about people as much as they do technology anymore?
Yeah, well, you know, Steve, it comes really to the point of trying to, you know, kind of honor and respect the people that you hire and giving them a chance to contribute to your goals and to your vision, giving them a clear direction as to what their responsibilities are at work and helping them become successful. And I think we're all taught when we were younger to surround yourself with success and you will be successful. It just increases your opportunity for success to work with good folks.
Yeah. And I've had the opportunity to meet some of the leaders that you've hired, and something that seems to be very unique about your people that I don't see in a lot of businesses your size, or I definitely don't see in technology businesses that are so about, you know, the technical side of the business as opposed to the people side. I mean, these are people who really care about each other, who care about, you know, the company, and who care about doing what's right. What's the secret, Tom? How do you get people like
this? Let's go into a break, and Tom, you sit on that while we're going into commercial. Okay. And that'll be a good segue into our next segment. Tom shares the secret sauce. Play 1180, excellentcultures.com, Biz Culture Matters. We'll be right back.
ExcellentCultures.com is always interviewing leaders committed to cultural leadership, excellence, and change. These leaders, like Russell Freeman, Ross Perot's COO, and Bob Hinton, CPA and Moss Adams Managing Partner, have world-class ideas. As advocates for creating a strong corporate culture that builds people and serves customers with excellence, they share breakthrough business ideas. Gain insights from Russell, Bob, and others on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
Has business taken over your life? Are you living to work or working to live? Stress, broken marriages, neglected relationships, and poor health are symptoms of a life out of balance. The right coaching plan can have transformational impact on the quality of your performance at work, depth of relationships at home, and personal sense of well-being. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work. Stop struggling to survive. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work.
We're back, everybody. Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. We have Tom Gobel on the line. Steve, you were just leading in, and Tom, hopefully you're ready to and prepared to share what's the secret sauce of creating a culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement in the technology field?
Well, a lot of it, you know, if you're striving to have a high-performance culture, it takes a lot of work to get there, and it requires a lot of discipline and consistency to kind of stay the course. And so it's really a fact of whether you like it or not, you have a culture. And Steve, you and I have talked about this quite a bit. And so it may be good, it may be bad, but the fact is you're viewed internally and externally with a culture. And it's so if you can work hard to develop a culture and create the culture within your business that's optimal and supports your vision and supports your objectives in the marketplace, then that it kind of starts at the top, but it kind of goes to everybody in the organization. And that's where, you know, the recognition, and when you talk about employee engagement, you know, folks want to be heard. And sometimes if you ask them, you know, what would you say if you did know, when they say they don't know, and you just try to draw people into the conversation and get them involved, it's surprising how the kind of contribution that some of your folks that you really almost least expect to step up will step up. You just have to give them the opportunity to do that.
Well, I've noticed that just in watching how you lead, Tom, you do such a wonderful, good job of it. But as our listeners are out there listening, and by the way, if you don't hear anything, everything that you want to hear from Tom on these, you know, insights, if you're in the technology world or you have a technology sector in your firm and some of what Tom is saying, if not all of it, is resonating, and you need more information, you want to hear more information, we're not going to give you Tom's email address, but you can email us to the confidential box at asktheexperts@excellentcultures.com, and we will sort those answers, get them to Tom, and get them back to you. And, you know, the secret sauce that I'm hearing, Tom, you talk about is kind of along the lines of the fact that, I mean, no business leader ever wakes up in the morning and says, okay, I want to be so focused on money, I want to be so focused on technology. I want to be so focused on competition that I just want to ignore my people and not care about what they think or what their ideas are or how they feel. It's all about driving forward. Nobody ever wakes up and thinks that. At least I don't think they do. But it's kind of just something that, you know, when you get in the jungle, slips into the culture, and the next thing you know, you're not paying attention, and then you have an ouch factor. What advice can you give to business leaders, you know, out there to, what can they do to make sure that they don't wake up with an ouch factor someday?
Well, hiring carefully is important. You know, you have to kind of understand, you know, who it is that you want to hire, and we use and have for years all the social media tools to look at someone's background, and we actually do kind of the personality assessments to make sure that they fit into the position description that we're looking for. And I think so, that, you know, hiring the correct people that fit your culture the best you can. Hiring's always can be a gamble, but you know, you do the best you can through some of the scientific, you know, processes out there, and it really truly increases the quality of the new hires. But when you hire folks like that, and you hire well, you know, people hold themselves to high values and high ethics themselves. And I think a lot of folks, when they come to work for you, they expect that the people that they work for, the company that they work for, are going to hold themselves to the same high standard. So it's not a double standard, that it's, you know, it's the company that they came to work for is the company that was portrayed to them during the interview process. And that's what you try to get out of the candidate, is, are you the person that you're portraying yourself to be as well? So it's getting that right fit where nobody's surprised, you know, a month into the job or even 6 months into the job, that people, everything that you told them about your business is true, and they see that. So I think a lot of the, correct approach to creating a stronger culture is showing that management does care, and that you care a lot about, you know, where you're going, how you're going to get there, and if you don't care, what can happen? And I see this happen too. Is if the management kind of loses their edge, it can take the wind out of the sails of the folks if they don't see that their management is in line with what they say on paper. So,
Tom, let me intervene for a second with you. What are some of the basic things that you've done to show that you care to your team and to your folks?
Well, I adopted. A long time ago, the concept of upside-down management. And I feel like for anybody that's not familiar with that, that's where it's an inverted org chart, and you work for everyone. So I feel like I work for everyone in the company. And so that shows that I care. We run our business under the principles of an open book practice. You know, we're a privately held company, and have grown quite a bit through the years. And so we have town meetings, and then we have quarterly all-employee meetings where my CFO gets up in front of everybody and talks about, you know, open book practices, how we're doing. You know, what you want to eliminate is you want to eliminate all the background talk and the people out in the parking lot and the folks that gather for coffee. When you walk up and everybody's quiet, you know, you have a bit of a problem. So we found that through open book management, town meetings, and through an upside down management approach of mentoring and feeling like we're trying to, you know, what do you need to be successful, and let me help. Maybe there's some of that I can do for you. So
right. That's good.
That's been helpful.
Well, and I've
somewhat
watched,
unique for a small business, I suppose.
Yeah.
I've watched you lead, Tom, and one of the things that I've noticed about you that is a quality that many leaders could do well to aspire to is if I was going to just look at how you operate and how you act and how you communicate and how you lead, kind of in a secret camera, what I would see right away is this guy really cares about the relationships that exist between himself and the people that he's involved with, whether they're clients, whether they are employees, whether they're managers. And it's not the curt, you know, robotic, oh, hi, Bill, and then you've got to pull out your handheld to see what Bill's spouse's name is and how are, you know, and you've got to pull it out and, you know, memorize what the kids' names are because it's politically correct and appropriate, but just, you know, not just the care factor that you have for people and human beings as human beings, not just, you know, functional parts of the company, but how you relationally interact with people on a regular basis and do that so very well so that when the crunch comes, regardless of how tough things are, you know, corporate politics always happen when you have three or more people in a firm and you've got a lot more than three. But when the care factor is there, it has a tendency to give you insights and windows into when, you know, corporate politics are crushing people in an organization. You know, you've got this capacity to sense that something isn't going like it should be, even though you may not know exactly what it is. You know, what advice can you give to leaders to, you know, to develop that so that, you know, they don't get so busy doing business and making deals that they forget about what really made them successful when they went into business to start with?
Well, when you're a smaller business, it's easier to do that. It's easy to be in front and center and to be a mentor and to care when you know every employee and every family and kind of have a feel for their lifestyle and all that. What happens when you grow is that, you know, everybody will know a lot about you, and it's hard for you as a CEO or a leader to know a lot about everybody. So I think one of the things that I try to do is just make myself more visible. The more visible I am, the more I learn, and the more people feel comfortable coming to me after hours, or I have, you know, the trite open door policy, but I really do. But an open door policy doesn't work if people are afraid of you or they don't really know you. And so
open door, closed heart, or closed mind.
Yeah, right. So yeah, so I think being visible is a big deal. I learned just recently we have meeting rooms at the end of a long hallway that are full of whiteboards and they're convenient to my office. And I just made a decision about a month ago to start meeting in a conference room that's closer to a large bullpen area with a lot of cubes and all that. And I just simply changed the meeting room that I meet at. So I have more meetings in a different conference room. And people see me coming and going out of that conference room. They see who I'm meeting with. And there's no, I mean, some of the stuff that we talk about is, you know, confidential, but there's no secret that I'm meeting with various people at, you know, different whiteboards, whiteboarding thoughts and trying to draw conclusions. And just by doing that, I've noticed, you know, a little bit of a spring in people's step just simply by seeing me more. And when I went down the hallway to meet at their more remote conference room that was convenient for me, you know, folks didn't see me. They might not see me all day if I went from my office down to that meeting room, which, you know, there's days that that's kind of my life. So I think being visible, if you can hand out paychecks on payday, if you can't just act like you care. I mean, you really have to care.
Yeah.
And if you have, you know, often I'll sense that something's wrong with somebody before their manager will, and I'll go to and I'll say, you know, if you talked to Lisa recently, you know, she just looked at me differently than I've seen her look at me, or you just kind of have to get a feel for people and you have to care. They know that you care, you know?
Yeah. As we're going into the break, what a way to segue. We have to actually care. I mean, people, it's like dogs sense fear. People, we as people can sense when we're not genuine, when others aren't. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. We're with Tom Gobel. We'll be right back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNTcultures or Facebook/excellentcultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
And we're back. Last segment with our guest, Tom Gobel of Network Computing Architects. Tom, thanks for sharing so candidly and so generously with our listeners today.
My honor.
It's refreshing to hear that from a leader, especially someone in the tech firm. I have a lot of friends that work in the tech side of things, and so quickly it can become so about the work and about the business and about, you know, it's like we all hate the work IT guy, right?
Yeah, right. Who's trying to service you, but
exactly
so many requests that he just doesn't understand why you don't get it.
Exactly,
right?
But your upside down organizational chart that you're the servant of your people and that you're there to help them and to equip them to do their jobs well is a wonderful thing. Steve, lead us into the last segment here.
Well, so. What I heard you say, and you know, I had to capture it immediately on, my iPhone.
Steve takes notes while we're on the radio,
yeah,
everybody.
I mean,
so if he goes silent, he's taking notes.
I'm constantly in a research mode. What can I learn from this leader that can help others? And one of the things that I heard you say that we'll tweet because it is so sound in terms of values and ethics, engagement, culture. Is you can't just act like you care. You have to care. And
yeah.
People know if you're acting like you care. And then what we see so much of now, especially, you know, as high-tech companies grow and improve and increase and they've got great technology and everything's moving like crazy, you know, I've heard, you know, heard stories about, Steve Jobs, who was a brilliant leader in the technology field and written books and been aspired after, But people felt uncomfortable getting into the elevator with him. And then I hear you say that you can't just act like you care, you have to care. Can you think of any advice or any tangible recommendations? Obviously, if you don't care, that's the attitude that needs to change or everything else.
We can help that, though, too.
Yeah,
we help people do that.
Yeah, we can. I mean, if you don't care, then that's an attitude that will resonate, and there's ways to change that in cultures that have that there's ways to change. But, Tom, what advice can you give to our listeners around, we know that you care, but how do you demonstrate that you care? Number one, and then number two, second question as a follow-up, can you think of any times when maybe you have slipped up or mistakes that you've made where you kind of got off of true north of this, you can't just act like you care, you have to care scenario, and how you learned from it and how you corrected yourself and how you got back on track? Those are things that, you know, every leader who's ever been involved in leading a business can benefit from hugely.
Well, a lot of being a leader, being an owner, there's a lot of misconception of employees of, you know, your worth, your value, what's in it for you. And so a lot of clear messaging has to come out of that. And what and basically, you have a lot of responsibility. And part of the responsibility is that you need to care, and you have to care because you have a lot of responsibility. So if you are, if you really care and you care about the people, you have, you know, two kinds of employees generally. You have company makers and company followers, and they're both important, and you need to care about both of them. You need people in the back office to run your business, and you need company makers out, you know, creating sales and, you know, invention and innovation to take to the market. So when you care, you have to, by having a closer pulse on the business, and that's your responsibility, you need to look for areas of negativity. So I guess if you can fail in caring, and what comes across as really not caring is when there's no negativity and you don't do anything about it.
Yeah.
So negativity can be a giant drain on your business, because they'll get the new ear, the ear of the new employee, and the new employee will disengage early because they've been told that nobody's listening and nobody really cares. And so part of that responsibility as a leader and as a manager and a CEO is to really look at, you know, the health of departments, the health of individuals, and manage to that point of, you know, it's almost like you don't have an employee review. You have, you rename that to a career guidance meeting or something, where you're asking them, okay, where are we at, you know, and, you know, making sure you have some of your people on the right track. And quite frankly, sometimes you have to care enough to release people to go grow somewhere else. And when you do that, often it seems like a tough decision. And when you'll find out from the employees that I'll watch that, you know, they often appreciate it, or they wondered if you saw that, you know, if you saw what they saw. And so, you know, it's, you know, a lot of times tough decisions, or what seem like tough decisions, are often met with applause, and it kind of settles people back in that, you know, they are listening, they are watching, and they do care. So, you know, with the current technology that's going on around smartphones and you typing notes into your iPhone while we're talking, and it's kind of communication's always on, you know, social media and the culture and personality of your business will be broadcast, and you'll have, you know, as you, the more you participate in that, the more you'll be open to criticism and disgruntled employees and people that didn't have their careers advanced the way they thought they would or whatever. And so you kind of have to take control of that, and nowadays you almost have to plan for, you know, what is your strategy around internal social media, external social media, because that's kind of how people communicate right now. And we're in a new area of working in a multi-generational workforce. So how you treat somebody that's in their 50s or 60s is different than how you're going to treat somebody even in their 30s.
Right.
Certainly way different than how you're going to treat somebody in their 20s or you know, the IY generation of having a computer when they were, you know, first touching something with a computer chip in it when they were 4 or 5 years old. I mean, it's all they know. So challenges come with that new paradigm about, you know, how do you treat people? You know, treating everyone the same really just doesn't work, and you have to appreciate the value that the different, you know, generations bring to your business. And a lot of it, you know, and I've talked about this before, I encourage all the listeners to just take an hour and look up Aristotle, who was born in 300 BC, and he really created a timeless definition around what's it like to be virtuous. Mm. And that's what our society and our businesses and everything is missing today, because a lot of folks were raised with, you know, working parents or single parents or or no guidance around virtue. And being virtuous is, you know, with Aristotle's findings, you know, a long time ago, hold true today, and that's around, you know, a virtue is around, you know, some of the areas of, you know, courage and friendliness and generosity and that type of thing. And then not, you know, understanding where you might be deficient or your life might be in excess. And I think that one of the things that we look at is, you know, how do we, you know, where are we as a company and as employees and as a business around our balance, and trying to teach younger people, you know, what, you know, what's it like to be more virtuous, and looking at, you know, the experience of older folks to actually have an opportunity to mentor younger folks. So it's hard to differentiate sometimes between doing the right thing and not doing the right thing. And with the tough economy that we've been faced with, it's been difficult for businesses to always do the right thing. And you know, some of the values around integrity, you know, it's pushing people. And unfortunately, people that are cracking a bit and letting their guard down or allowing a lack of integrity in their business, and knowing that that's happening, when the economy recovers, everybody will remember. So you kind of want to try to build a business that, you know, is the same in a tough economy as it is in a flourishing economy. And, you know, good days will come back, and people are going to, you know, they'll remember, you know, what you did when you were challenged with growth and you were challenged with profitability and whether or not you did the right thing. So it's important, I think, to just always operate based on, you know, your own guiding principles and reward people for doing the right thing.
Yeah.
So one quick question, and I kind of picked this up as you were talking about hiring people in social media. Am I correct in assuming that if I'm having chat on Facebook with my friends about last Friday night's party and some of the stuff that happened that, gosh, we didn't know it was going to happen, but it just did, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that I go in to apply for a job and the people that are hiring me are probably going to have that in their profile about the kind of person that I really am?
I think every HR department does that today. So we started doing it when that stuff first came out, and we started making hiring decisions a long time ago based on what people's social personality was, if you will. It's a different challenge today, Steve and Zach. It's a challenge around you can't control what's said.
Yeah.
And so around the social media side of your business, you could have a angry customer that has nothing better to do than to disparage you on a major social site. And there's no fairness to the world. It's just the way things are headed. And so, yeah, I mean, people have to understand whatever you put on the internet, you know, whatever you tweet,
it's there.
If you tweet,
yeah,
you're basically talking to the whole world.
Forever. It doesn't get erased.
Forever.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that's a huge thing.
If you, you know, if you want to mix your personal life on to, you know, a social media site, you need to understand that would you say that same thing if your mom was in the room or your grandmother or your employer or, you know, and that's the mistake that people are making is they're, you know, people sometimes just don't know better.
Yeah.
Or the, you know, some of the younger generation are just their confidentiality and it's, you know, they're growing up fast and it's hard for them to understand that that is important, that people are watching. So
advice there, Tom. Thank you. We're out of time, but we appreciate you being on the show. Our first Cougar. Thank you.
Yeah.
We're looking forward to it.
Yeah. And listeners, make sure if there's additional information you'd like to hear from Tom's secret sauce, send us an email on the confidential box at asktheexperts at excellentcultures.com or visit our site, click on the Get Started button. We'll screen things. We'll make sure that Tom gets the good stuff, and we'll get back to you.
There you go. And we're closing up, guys.
Thanks, Zach.
Thank you, Tom. It was wonderful having you on. Last thought for everybody. This came up just as I was thinking of Tom's advice throughout the show. The first responsibility of a leader is to define reality. The last is to say thank you. And in between, the leader is a servant. That's from Max Dupree. Thanks, Tom. Thanks, guys. We'll catch you next week.